You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guests on this hour are Liz and Dick Adams. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here this morning.
Glad to be here.
Just the way we start this show is we ask our guests, and we're having two guests today, so this is going to be interviewing a couple, and you guys have been married for 54 years. And so we're not going to capture all of your lives together, but but what I'm trying to do with this show is to help introduce the people of this region to each other, so that we can get to know our neighbors over the radio and to talk about things that we wouldn't necessarily normally hear about in just polite conversation, to take it a little bit deeper and to model a little bit about how we can meet each other. And most of my guests I meet for the first time, actually, when they come into the studio, and then we have this fairly intimate conversation. But I've known you a little bit over the years, so this isn't a new place for us, but it's been several years since we've really sat down and had a conversation.
Right?
Yes.
So tell me, you know, who are you? For each of you, what is a story that kind of gives a picture of your life, or what are the pieces of the broad mosaic of your life? Just briefly, who are you individually?
I guess I'll start.
Sure.
I was brought up in Southern California in Riverside to a Methodist family, traditional. I was the youngest of three children. Because of that, I think I learned how to be a listener, because there was a lot of other things going on, and so I became quite attentive listening to other people.
Right. And you were born in the middle of the Depression.
Just after,
as we were coming out. Yeah.
So my parents were influenced by the Depression.
Right.
My mother was involved in rummage sales, and also it was the Second World War when I was going to elementary school.
Right.
So she was involved helping. What was it? UFO. It was
USO.
Also teaching students of other language. That she was teaching English.
Just people who didn't speak it.
Who didn't speak English.
Cool. So you're from California.
Right.
So Dick.
Yes.
Where do you want to start?
Well, I'll start in my home, because I might be the first person that you've had that was born in Hector.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, but maybe.
You're not, but I'm not absolutely certain of the actual birthplace, but I think, yeah. But anyway,
Okay.
But it's close. Right. There are two or three people from Hector already.
I was born in Hector on a farm that goes right to the lake, and we actually live a few hundred feet from that place now. Mm-hmm.
From the building you were born in.
From where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a one-room schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
14 kids with, let's say, grade 1 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
So you figure it's like 3 or 4 in each grade.
Right.
And I then went off to the big city, Watkins Glen, to the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was different for me.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kept going on. But being in Hector, of course, been away from there for many years, but we've now been back to Hector for about 30 years?
20.
20.
20
years.
20
years.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
How many years were you in Ithaca?
Good question. How many years in Ithaca? I probably have that down here, but I think it was 30. We were in Groton for
a few of those
almost 30, wasn't it, Liz?
23 years.
23.
Yeah. And do you want to say a little bit about one of the challenges for this interview for you today?
One of the challenges. Well, One of the challenges, frankly, is trying to remember everything.
Yes. Yes.
That's one of the challenges. But I was for doing it, and it's been a real job for me, or a real exciting thing to do, mm-hmm. that I have been working on what I've been doing for the last 75 years, mm-hmm. for about a week. Right. And it's been a long time since I said, you say, oh my gosh, did I do that? Is that when I... mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's been positive for me. Very
right.
positive.
Right. No, and what I want to say, and I don't want to push it too much, but I want to commend you for your courage and your sense of humor in coming on to a show when you have early stage memory loss, early stage
yeah.
dementia.
Wow.
And this is something that we need to be comfortable with and take it as a fact of life. And you're here. And Liz right. is partly your memory, or she's your memory checker at this point.
She is amazing. She will tell me stories of 70 years ago. Talking about, well, I remember this person who did that. I can't.
Stories that you told her that she's telling you back.
Well, stories that I don't know whether they're real or not.
And I can bluff.
Yes.
But I am very, very amazed at her.
Yeah. Yeah, and
even that she married that was amazing to me.
Right, and even when we are have a fully functioning memories drift, memories change, mm-hmm. and what matters is the life we make together now, more mm-hmm. than our ability to pinpoint the past or to aim for a specific future, all of which are largely things that are out of our control. And beyond our knowledge.
Right.
It is really, really good to have you here. And you brought some music, and we're going to start with the theme Up With People. And that'll be our first piece for today.
Great.
It happened just this morning. I was walking down the street. A milkman and a postman and a policeman I did meet. There in every window and at every single door, why, I recognize people I never noticed before.
But don't let anybody start attacking peoplehood. Love them as they are, but fight for them to be great men and great women as God meant them to be.
Up, up.
and that up with people, that was a traveling show. It had many groups that traveled around the United States and performed those shows, I think in the late 60s or early 70s. And from my recollection of that, growing up on a farm in Northwest Missouri, mm-hmm. and knowing about this, they came through Kansas City and St. Joseph, yeah. and places, mm-hmm. was that kind of the last push before, as a country, we became dominated with the politics of hate.
Hmm.
Where we hated others, mm. who didn't, whose values were not our same, or were not the same as ours, mm-hmm. and where difference became something. And one of the lines in that song that stands out to me is, you know, people are full of both good and bad, you know, but you know, never don't put people down. You know, you gotta accept people as they are.
Right.
How did you learn that?
How did we learn it in life?
Yeah, how did you learn it in life? Yeah, how did you come, what experience, because of all the people I know, you model this kind of, you're not particularly easily unsettled with people who are different mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. you. How mm-hmm. did you learn that?
I think for me, it goes way back. I'll tell you a brief story. When I was in Riverside, I was 5 years old, and a neighbor, Kathleen Ringland, invited me to Vacation Bible School. And the theme for Vacation Bible School was on international, that God's children were all around the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there was a poster that was used with children of all different races standing in a circle holding hands. And that picture, not so much what I learned at the VBS,
right.
but the picture stuck with me throughout my whole life. And I can see just different times in my life when I have known people of other nationalities. I think of our son who went to Mexico as an exchange student, and mm-hmm. we had one in our house, and we became members of Servos, which is an international hosting organization. Mm-hmm. So when we were in Europe, we visited people in different countries, and then people come to our house. Matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, we had a German family of five people show up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And our youngest son married an Indian woman. Her family was from India. We've had just a lot of positive experiences of, mm-hmm. of getting to know people of different cultures.
Right, and there was, people are often more open to difference than their experiences will show. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You can be open to something. I can, in the county I grew up in, there was not a single African American or Latino
right.
family.
Right.
But there were people. You defined the people in that county by those who were open to others and those who weren't. And those who weren't open to others often weren't very kind to each other in the community
mm-hmm.
either.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a larger picture. Dick, how did you, coming from Burdett, how did you get this openness?
Oh, not
to
Burdett.
People?
Burdett, that's another city.
Oh, hold on, Hector, I'm sorry. Yes, I forgive me for misspeaking. I have other friends in Burdett. So I'm sorry if they're on the opposite side of the line. Yes. Acceptance has to end somewhere, right?
Well, I actually... of course, my first move was to Watkins Glen, to school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was different.
So you moved where you lived, or you just commuted in?
Oh, no. I had to go on the bus.
Right.
And we had a family of four kids. My sister, who is 93 now.
So is 13
still
or
going.
14 years older than you, depending upon how
yeah.
you count.
Yeah, right.
And I'm the one left beside her. Where were we now?
How did you learn to be open to people?
Oh, I would certainly say that would probably be when I went to college. I went to college to Worcester, Ohio,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and which actually this is one of those things I got to tell you, that my parents were driving one day going west, and they ended up going through Worcester, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And that actually is a Presbyterian-related college. And they told me I was, I was in high school then. They said, this might be a place, let's stop and see. Mm-hmm. It might be a good college for you to go. And I said, no way. I am not getting out, and I'm not going to that college, and I'm not even going to get out of the car.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes. A model, a paragon of acceptance here, yes.
Yes. And I didn't get out. But the next year, I decided, oh, that sounds like a good college.
So did you go to it not having gotten out to it?
Boy, that's a good question. I may have visited it then. Yeah, maybe I did. Took another trip and visited. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, mm-hmm. I went to Worcester, and but then I went to MIT. Mm-hmm. So I... big changes for me, having right. living in the Hector, to go now mm-hmm. out of all of these big cities.
Yep.
And so it was kind of interesting when I think of it now, and that was kind of the beginning of my traveling from one end of the country to the other, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. meeting my wife in California and all of these things.
I might add one thing, and that is your home in Hector. When I first came back, I just noticed how they lived on 414 Main right. Thoroughfare,
Main Road, yeah.
And their doors were always open, mm-hmm. and people were coming in all the time, just visiting, dropping by. Mm-hmm. And I thought, from my Southern California experience, we didn't do that.
Oh, yeah.
And I was really yeah. impressed by just the way they accepted whoever walked through the door.
Mm-hmm. She was a city girl.
Yeah, yeah. And where did you two meet?
We met in Redondo Beach.
Uh-huh. Oh.
That was when Dick had come out from MIT and had started working there in aerospace.
So he's in his young early 20s at that point?
Mid-20s. Mid-20s, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I was out of UCLA and was living with some friends on the Esplanade in Redondo, and he and two MIT buddies were living about three or four doors down on the Esplanade. And we also were a part of a Presbyterian church at that time, or at least we were attending.
Right, right, right.
And that brings me up to the thing I've got to put in, see, and that was we met, what was the year?
1959.
Mm-hmm. And about a year later, that summer, she was a neighbor, mm-hmm. and I had met her on the beach, and I said, she's a nice lady, young girl. And
the joke here is that she's 6 months older than he is, yeah, right. and she just turned 80, and he hasn't quite yet turned, so he's still razzing her.
Yeah, so I asked her out once, and I got a date with her, and it was going to be the next weekend. And so the day before, I went over to see her and said, just wanted to see where would you like to go with me. She said, oh, I'm going to be busy that day. I says, you're going to be busy that day? I had a date with you. Well, she said, the guy was sick the day he was
supposed to. The week before.
The week before.
So
that took care of me for about 2 months. And then after I went through that, I finally... One day, ask her. I'm going to have to go through with this. Ask her again, and she took me out with another fellow and I and good friend and and came back, and we had had a little bit of wine, I think, on the...
With a spaghetti dinner.
With a spaghetti dinner, which he had never... oh, now you got up to real important things. She'd never figured it had spaghetti before, and so I had to teach her how to, you know.
Okay.
But anyway, when we got home, I opened the door and let her out to say good night. Uh-huh. And my gosh, she came at me and kissed me. Mm-hmm. And so that was how it got started.
And that was his story.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And we will have time for the alternative or the rebuttal or the whichever version. But I just want to note one of the things that in many places, it's how we deal with the initial rejections that help define how we come out further down the road. Your story about college is the same story, and not getting out of the car and not looking, and then choosing, and then getting caught in other people's plans, and then the experience of rejection. And it's part of the reason, for example, if you want to convert to Judaism, and if you've got an Orthodox rabbi, they're going to turn you away at least three times. You have to come repeatedly before they will begin the process, because you have to deal with the rejection in order to make sure you're clear. Huh. And that's a very powerful lesson.
That's a good insight,
And it helps us to be resilient. Mm-hmm. It encourages us not to let anything have a final word. It's always a work in process. Mm-hmm. So what's your version of your meeting as a couple?
Okay.
Or do we need to go?
Yeah, right. When we went out and we had dinner, we were a double date, and we danced. That was kind of nice. And we came back to the house, and he let me out, and we walked up to the porch in front of the house. And that was where I lost my balance.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Which was interpreted differently by Dick.
Yes.
And my pencil came at me, and there was nothing else I could do.
Yes. And the natural response was to simply kiss, right? Well, we're not going to go into why the balance was lost or what it all meant, but somehow 50, how many years? How long was it before you actually, how long did you date?
Oh,
what was your courtship like?
Well, we dated a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm putting a couple of commas around.
There's irony in your voice.
Yeah, and and she took a trip in the fall to where?
Europe,
yeah. And she was gone a month. And, well, probably shouldn't say this, but I still have the letters that I wrote her every day.
Mm-hmm. She got them and then brought them back, and you still have those.
And
letters.
It was when she got back, that I said, "Would you marry me?"
Mm-hmm. That was while I was washing dishes.
Right, you know, you gotta get these things in while you can. You don't want to waste time. You don't want to multitask. You know,
that's right.
I mean, I know he grew up on a farm. I know exactly.
You have to be practical.
So that was totally underwhelming, right?
That was in October.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to wait to get married until
February.
February of 1960, this would be now.
That's right.
We've moved up.
So you can guess that I never had a doubt that why wait?
Yes. And not everybody has the same experience. How did you react?
Well, I thought that the trip to Europe was turned out to be a really good thing, because we had probably more dialogue through letters and postcards than we would have if we had been together. And I think it sort of tested the time that by the time I got back, you know. And I do remember, I really challenged him because I was really on to this thing, if I have to do God's will, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And I remember in one of the letters challenging him about our relationship. And I said, do you think this is God's will? And Dick responded and said, yes. And I read that and I went, oh, okay. Well, that settles it.
So your challenge only went so far. Yeah, the right. Follow-up question didn't quite.
And so when he did officially ask me, it wasn't a difficult question to answer. Mm-hmm,
And this is God's will is a constant. It's a theme in your lives, I think. I sense just because of how you have kind of kept the faith in a variety of different settings. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What did that mean to you then, and what does it mean to you now? And I'm going to let you think about that for a second, and I'm going to suggest, can we go to Katie Malua, or if you were a sailboat, would that be a good...
Absolutely.
So let's do that. And I don't know how to pronounce your last name, so if you can, that would be great.
Can you pronounce it?
Malua, is that how you pronounce
Katie
it?
Katie Malua.
Malua. If you were a sailboat. This is a beautiful, beautiful song. It is.
If you're a cowboy, I would trail you. If you're a piece of wood, I'd nail you to the floor. If you're a sailboat, I would sail you the shore. If you're a river, I would swim you. If you're a house, I would live in you all my days. If you're a preacher, I'd begin to change my ways. Sometimes I believe in fate, but the chances we create always seem to ring more true. You took a chance on loving me, I took a chance on loving you. If I was in jail, I know you'd spring. If I was a telephone, you'd ring me all day long. If I was in pain, I know you'd sing me soothing songs. Sometimes I believe in fate, but the chances we create always seem to ring more true. You took a chance on loving me, I took a chance on loving you. If I was hungry, you would feed me. If I was in darkness, you would was a book, I know you'd read me every night. If you're a cowboy, I would trail you. If you're a piece of wood, I'd nail you to the floor. If you're a sailboat, I would sail. If you're a
And that was Katie Malou, and If You Were a Sailboat. And there's a line in that. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guests on this hour are Liz Adams and Dick Adams. And you got married 54 years ago in January. And the question was, how do you know it's God's will, or is it God's will? The question wasn't how do you know, it was is it? I want to spend a little time, because you are people who have had a long marriage, a long life of activism, a long life of trying to bring out the positive in people while also dealing with some really negative stuff politically. But how in your relationship did you feel that it was God's will, or how have you felt that notion of keeping faith? Which is another way of saying God's will. Where can, you know, the line is, you took a chance on loving me, and I took a chance on loving you. And
that's a tough question.
I don't mess around with too many easy questions.
I don't know. It seemed, for one thing, especially after Dick changed from engineering, when he started the bookstore, it seemed like everything we did was as a team. And it just, like, and when I go through my history, I realize it's so much what Dick has done, but I've so embodied it in my own self that I think I've done it too.
You have. But that's the way it appears from the outside.
Uh-huh. And so it just has increasingly felt, yes, this is, that we're good for each other, and we're very different. Dick is the one who questions everything,
right?
And I'm the one that trusts everything. And someplace in between, it's right.
Right.
So we balance each other.
But how did, I guess, and so I, a whole bunch of questions come to mind, but first, you started out in engineering, and what did you do, and when did you make that transition? And then we'll come back to what it means.
When did I make that transition from engineering?
Yeah, or what did you do as an engineer?
Well, as an engineer, oh my gosh. I worked on aerospace. I went to California from MIT. And was what was the name of it? With the name of the
Thompson Ramo Wooldridge.
I actually did work on aerospace on
NASA.
On the ships that are going up.
Right, the space shuttles.
And I did stuff on.
So just
I have stacks of books that I wrote. I can pick up them up now, and I don't have the foggiest
idea what they were about. Absolutely. So when did you make the transition from engineering to what year did you do that? Or was it a process?
Let's see. I would say it was engineering. When was it, Liz? You got it.
Okay. In 1970.
70.
You got out of engineering.
Right.
And started a franchise business called New Product Development Services.
Yeah, so prior to that, I had done different things. I mean, I worked in California,
right.
And then I went to back to Boston and worked on aerospace things there. And so I went back and forth. And I'm looking at this myself, is that I figured, it was about 30 years through California after I was born, and then I was in Boston 9 years, And Groton was still not aerospace anymore, right?
Yeah. Right. You went from new product development services to Logos, but that's a big story there.
Yeah. And I'm going to come back to that in just a second. What I want to ask you is, how has your love for Liz changed over those early years of your marriage? Do you remember how your feelings have changed?
Boy. I still like her quite a lot.
I kind of trust that. Yeah.
How has yours changed? It doesn't sound like a question to me.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, no, I know. You were the questioner, and now I'm asking the questions.
Uh-huh.
And you were the truster.
Right.
And one of the things that happens with memory loss is that, and if you can do it, because this is a challenge, is that you can trust her. And somehow over the years, and somehow in this space of time where your memory issues have kicked in, you trust her probably more than you ever did, is my guess. Mm-hmm. And you are questioning now and taking a lead in a way that you never had to, mm-hmm. Liz. And that is a profound change of role in a relationship. Mm-hmm. It's powerful. And when you can do that dance with grace, you're a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right on. Yeah. Because our background was I did trust Dick for many things. Dick was the strong one. He's the one with the memory. He's with the intelligence and the capabilities. He could do a lot of different things. I always told him if we moved to a third world country, I think he'd do just great because he can repair just about anything.
Right. That's the way his mind works. Yeah. And he's good with his hands.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was of the school that a wife should be submissive, which was very easy for me because that was the easy way out, mm-hmm. to be mm-hmm. submissive and to go along with whatever Dick was interested in.
But my guess is that you also knew, I mean, there's a little bit of, in that statement, there's also a knowledge of how to challenge from below, from the subordinate position, so that mm-hmm. you can actually manage from below. And women who are mm-hmm. really effective in that, and men who are really genuine and generous in a position mm-hmm. of authority, the power situations begin to level out. How mm-hmm. did you learn to negotiate with Dick?
I think it was very gradual. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't think it was something that I was strategizing organic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what changed?
I'm probably when I had other responsibilities. I think initially I was a mother with four children at home, and so probably self-image was not as high as it could have been. I felt like, you know,
you got these kids hanging from you.
Yeah, right. But then when we moved to Groton and Dick started the store and I ended up working in the store, then I got to know people in that setting. And also, I took leadership positions in the church. And so with each new responsibility, I think I felt more comfortable mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In that relationship with Dick.
Right. And this is a life process. In some relationships, the stronger personality, the dominant personality is the woman, and the more submissive or less dominant personality is the man. And just learning how to, you can't calculate your way into mm-hmm. those things, but you can feel your way
mm-hmm.
into it if you give yourself the time. Now I want to cut to another song now, if we might. Mm-hmm. What about either Holy Now or Somewhere at this point? or climb every mountain. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe somewhere.
Somewhere. Okay. Okay. And this is Barbara Streisand performing Somewhere. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour, our guests are Liz and Dick Adams. And right now we're kind of just talking about where to take this. And one of the special things about this show is Dick is dealing with issues of memory loss, and Liz is also trying to kind of help him be that memory, but also to talk about their relationship. And at 80 or almost 80, this is a balancing act. And I want to share kind of the insight of that in ways that are respectful, loving, and illustrative of the ups and the downs of the challenge. So anyway, how has coming into retirement and then experiencing dementia and also just the changes that come with you both of mm-hmm. you, how has that been kind of like you thought it would be, and how has it been not like you thought it would be?
Well, I probably never thought of it.
You didn't anticipate. You were doing the stuff every day at a time, one day at a time.
Right. And I'm trying to think of when. It's probably been the last 2 years, and the last year is. Mm-hmm. been more, so it was, I would think, a bit of a surprise. I particularly, I mean, I would say for myself, actually for myself, I mean, I have, you know, I'm thinking of my sister who is 9 years older than I am, or
13
years older than I am, and I think, my gosh, I mean, she's, you know, not, but I'm not that that much, but I'm amazed at how she's doing.
And does she have problems with memory, or is she?
Oh, yeah.
Similar. I mean, there are some.
Absolutely, but mine is no, you know, it's not the same thing. It's that age, and
right.
makes me kind of think, am I getting that old?
Yeah. Well, it's a different memory loss, because hers is right immediate. I mean, Dick has some of that, but his is, all his past history is wiped. You know, he knows very little about the past, whereas his sister knows some about the past, but she doesn't know what happened 5 minutes ago.
Right, so she has the short-term memory loss completely, and you've lost it. And do you know what the causes are of that, or is that something that you've been able to or wanted to explore? Or?
I have no idea.
We haven't had any insight from our doctor, Dick did go through some tests, a year ago, and he's supposed to go through them again. Interestingly enough, when he went through it the first time, he came out with flying colors, and that always puzzled me, because
what did it mean to come out with flying colors?
Well, I guess the things that, whatever the questions were, they were things he could answer. I think part of it was how to work out problems, and he was good at working out problems.
And he's still good at working out problems.
Yeah, but not quite as good.
Right.
So that was, it wasn't dealing so much with, would you remember what
went on? Right.
So his thinking ability was good.
I think going back to this, I think my ability was, or my long time was, that I moved throughout the years into other places. I mean, I myself have a hard time thinking, my gosh, I was working on aerospace and I was doing all these high-tech things, and then I ended up running a bookstore. And it was just because, as something came along, and I was thinking, I actually haven't ever been fired. It wasn't, have I?
No.
I never thought of that, but now I say, I went into all of these different places. It wasn't because I got fired. It's like, oh, I think that'll be interesting.
Right.
So,
and that's a big difference.
I think that's a very positive for me. I think it was probably a time of of not just a time of life, but mm-hmm. a time that life was pretty easy. I mean, mm-hmm. I think I've had it pretty easy in the last.
Your generation and those just generation. A little older than you experienced the major growth of the U.S. economy, have had a level of security that your children and grandchildren won't right. have and that that's your parents right. didn't have, and right. that's very powerful. But you lived out of with a great sense of curiosity, I think, and you mm-hmm. both have a sense of mm-hmm. openness and curiosity, which is mm-hmm. impressive to me. The other thing, though, you're saying you weren't fired, and this is something where because you could live out of your curiosity and in an expanding job market or where there are opportunities, mm-hmm. people can move on. Mm-hmm. But most people will change careers 2 to 3 to 4 times over the course of that. They'll change jobs many times, perhaps even in the same mm-hmm. business or organization. Mm-hmm. But almost everybody's going to get fired at least once. And mm-hmm. whether or not it's for cause or just because they're downsized or whatever, mm-hmm. and coping with that and having a sense of life that's bigger than what you mm-hmm. do, or somehow mm-hmm. not completely tied up to what you do, mm-hmm. your life has always kind of I think that's the way we approach it with the coming generation is they need to have a sense of life that's bigger than their work, but yeah. your mm-hmm. sense of life. Kind of enveloped your work and your mm-hmm. family, and it was all mm-hmm. from an outside point of view, it's all one big piece that kind mm-hmm. of moves and evolves together yeah. over time. Mm-hmm. How did you amble into that? And I want to hear from
yeah. Well, I guess what I would like to bring up is everything was going very smoothly with engineering. He loved engineering, mm-hmm. but he thought, well, I've done this long enough. I'm ready to move on to something. And so he got in this invention business where he was helping inventors put their inventions in industry. And that turned out to be a disaster.
All right. Yeah. It did have disaster.
So there's a failure, but not necessarily a firing.
that's right.
No, I said I'm quitting.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that was when... there was a partner, and the two of them, they'd run out of money. We'd mm-hmm. gone through our savings, or at least a good part. And the other guy said, well, no, I think we're going to need to borrow $150,000 to keep this going. And at that point, Dick said, I think this is crazy.
Yeah, it was.
And so that was a time to terminate that particular project. So going to the next occupation, which ended up being a Christian bookstore, was not a very natural extension of Dick's engineering mm-hmm. background.
Mm-hmm. So how did you, and I guess one of the things, since this hour is about to wind down, you founded a Christian bookstore, but also, I want to hear a little bit about that, but also, what do you do? What are the practices that you do to kind of... We end the show every time with some thoughts on how people sustain themselves. So let's hear about how you got into the Christian bookstore, and then I'm going to change gears.
Oh, so well, I let me do that.
Sure.
I don't know why we did it. I just met this guy, and he had a bookstore. Let her tell him.
Yes.
I'll give the more comprehensive view, but it has to be short, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It was something where I was looking at a page ad of Christian books in a magazine, and I said, what about a Christian bookstore? Of course, this was a soul-searching mm-hmm. time.
Sure, okay? Absolutely.
And so it was... That led to Dick talking with some people in church, some guys who were seminary students who then knew the owners of Logos Bookstore in Harvard Square, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and said, why don't you go down and meet them? Which he did, and he volunteered 3 months, and then he went and started a bookstore.
Wow.
I volunteered. I'd never read books. I read one a day.
Mm-hmm. After
and,
right.
and said, oh, okay.
You can do this? That's yes. powerful. That is powerful.
So.
Yeah. So what do you guys do on a daily basis to kind of keep even keeled or optimistic, or what do you do to take care of yourselves?
What do we do? Boy, it doesn't seem like we do much, but it seems, but we're busy all the time.
Yes, yeah. And I'm, yes, and that's the summary statement. Now, what's the unpacked version?
Well, for me, when I need to recap.
Mm-hmm.
Recoup.
Yes.
Is, I need time of quiet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, of course, we live on a lake, which is wonderful. So I just need that time to reflect, and whether it's go for a walk or maybe play the piano,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
something just to settle my thoughts down.
Right.
Yeah.
And to find that calm space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
You're always busy. It was Office of the Aging or da 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 or this or that. I mean,
yeah.
Busy all the time with.
Yeah. And most of the time you're together, or do you spend? I mean, this is one of the things that people think about.
Yeah.
I've had another friend who's a partner she spent 10 years basically going to different events and living her life, and he would come along. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, he participated, and as time went by, mm-hmm. he would be there. But it was constant activity. It was good exercise, and it kept her, you know, stimulated and engaged with people, so she never got isolated. And so many caregivers get isolated. And so many people with dementia or memory loss become a little bit scared because they're not around people enough to kind of keep it up. But you guys seem to be in a different path.
Yeah, different path. Dick doesn't do that.
We're going to continue this conversation briefly off air, and we'll play the remainder of it at a future date, or maybe we'll have it online. For those who wish to listen, these shows are archived at madeofclay.org, where you can listen to them. But right now, we're going to close with your song, the one that you definitely wanted to get to before we came to an end, Pete Seeger's version of Forever Young. Do you want to say something about that before we play it?
No, glad you could do it.
Yeah. It's one that we listened to the day that he died.
Yes.
And it would just seem to be the essence of the man that we admire.
And actually, it was just only the last year that I just, when I started turning on and hearing him do this, I don't know whether he got the one with the kids doing it.
Yes, we've got the one with the kids,
You know, it just brought tears to my eyes because I just, the guy was, and we have been to see him before.
Well, thank you, Liz and Dick, for joining us for this
thank
hour.
Thank you.
Yes.
And this one made me cry.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung. And may you stay forever young. May you stay forever young. May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the lights surrounding you. May you always be courageous. Stand upright and be strong. And may you stay forever young. May you stay forever young.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guests on this hour were Liz and Dick Adams.